Mics are live.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, dear.
I would like to take a moment to say thank you to the Carmody Middle School Choir and their director, Jessica Sweet, for their exciting performance this evening. They were exceptionally entertaining. Now let's call this study session to order. The first item on our agenda in this hour-long study session is an early childhood education update. Our two study session topics tonight are focused on early childhood education in Jeffco. I'm happy to welcome the team providing us this update tonight. Thank you for coming up. We start with a review of preschool retention rates across the district and summarize the impact of preschool attendance and enrollment in Jeffco's public schools, as well as plans for preschool cohort achievement data. The Board of Education will also learn about some of the programming components in preschools and our plans to ensure the sustainability of our budgets for early learning. Dr. Glass, do you have anything you'd like to add?
Yes, Mr. President. As you mentioned, there are two parts to this study session. One is sort of looking back and looking at where we presently are in terms of providing quality early childhood education in Jeffco. The second part is attached to your strategic plan, and it's looking forward and thinking about what our aspirations are. This will be the second stock take presentation that you've had on your strategic plan. And at this phase in our evolution or growth when it comes to strategic planning, I really would encourage the board to think critically and critique the thinking, the wording, the measures that we're bringing forward. It's a work in progress, and it will take us some time as we process through all of these to try and really get some specificity and clarity around what we're trying to do and how we're trying to do it. So it's just an open invitation for you, board, to really think critically about the information that we're bringing forward.
Super. Thank you, Dr. Glass. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Matt Flores to begin. And Matt, I would ask that you introduce the team that's with you, please, or figure out how to do that one way or the other.
Thank you, President Mitchell. As you said, my name is Matt Flores. I have the privilege of serving as Chief Academic Officer. I'm here with Don O'Dean, our Director of Early Learning, and Dr. Heather McGilvery, our Director of Research and Assessment. Tonight, we're excited to share with you some of the information around our early learning programs. As you had mentioned, we'll start with some information on our data. We'll move on to talk about the impact of attendance in preschool and what that means for students as they move through our system, and talk about some of the programming components in preschool. As Dr. Glass mentioned, this will then transition into our stock take for early learning, which is directly connected to our strategic plan. As mentioned, we're going to start with some of our data. So with that, I'll turn it over to Dr. Heather McGilvery.
Okay. So this slide demonstrates some of the enrollment patterns in Jeffco. What we did is we followed the enrollment patterns of a cohort of Jeffco preschoolers from school year 13-14.
Thank you.
Is that better? I'm closer.
The closer is better.
I can't get it out. There we go. Okay. Including both 3-year-olds and 4-year-olds. For two school years. So we looked at where they were in 13-14 and where they went in 14-15 and 15-16. Students enrolled in Jeffco preschools had a strong tendency to attend Jeffco schools, preschool or elementary, with 88% remaining in district schools in the first year and 78% remaining in the second year. Similarly, charter schools, which are open enrollment schools, within the district tended to retain preschool students, although at a somewhat lower rate, 82% and 70% for the first and second year, respectively. Districts and charter schools lost students from Jeffco at very similar rates, 10% and 7% lost in the first year, and 18% and 13% lost in the second year, respectively. These patterns support the overall hypothesis that parents tend to keep their children in the school that they enroll them in initially. Again, we don't know the why behind all these numbers, but these are the patterns from the numbers, if that makes sense. Next slide. Thank you. So this is where it gets a little more complicated. So upon closer inspection of the data, this is from 13-14 to 14-15 in year one. In the first year, there's some very complex patterns of movement in these sort of broad categories that I just introduced. In the first year, the high capture rate of district-run preschools breaks down into the following categories. Of those preschoolers, 90% of the preschoolers who remain preschoolers, so they're 3 years old and then they're 4 years old, they stay in the same preschool. So those three-year-olds to four-year-olds, 90% of them stay in the same preschool. Now, of those students who are four and then matriculate to kindergarten, 40% of those remain in the same school, and 40% of those matriculate to a kindergarten enrolled in a different district-run school. And so you can see those sort of patterns across charter schools and district schools. Again, we don't know the why behind this. We know that all of our elementary schools do not offer preschools, and we know that some people will then move from one school where there's a preschool to their neighborhood school or to a charter school that is closer to them that may not have a preschool, or they may not have been able to get into that preschool. So again, we don't know the why. This pattern was repeated in Jeffco charter preschools, with charter schools retaining the bulk of their students in both preschool and kindergarten in 14-15. And I'll go over the next slide. This is a two-year, so from 13-14 to 15-16, where it gets much more complex. But we still see the same pattern of preference for the preschool location continued in the second year, although the number of students who left the district increased, which is understandable. We don't know why they're in and out, but there are probably a variety of reasons. Note that enrollment patterns become increasingly complex, with students moving among schools as well as out and then back into the district from year to year. So what we did with these Sankey charts is we tried to simplify them as best as possible to enable some of these patterns to emerge and to be seen and grasped quickly. Next slide. So this slide just summarizes what I've said in the previous slide. And again, these are Jeffco data, but there is an abundance of research out there about preschool in general. There's a strong body of empirical evidence, scientifically based research, that indicates that high quality preschool results in many beneficial outcomes for kids, including positive cognitive and academic impacts. For our families most distant from opportunity, high quality preschool has been found to have those cognitive and academic impacts, but as well as social, emotional, and family and wellness benefits. Slide. The data on the previous slide show a consistently high rate of capture of students attending Jeffco preschools. This initial evidence strongly indicates that attending a preschool may influence the future path of that student. However, we cannot categorically claim that attending a Jeffco preschool increases the odds of that student will end up enrolling in a district-run school because there is a missing piece. We don't know the enrollment paths of students who don't attend Jeffco preschools. So there's a large bulk of students who we don't know what their preschool experience is, and we're working to address that. So this fall, incoming kindergarten parents will be surveyed regarding their child's preschool experiences, whether that was a formal preschool, home care, a child care center, an in-home provider, or some combination thereof. In January of 2019, the hope is for parents to provide preschool information consistently and ongoing through the kindergarten registration system in Jeffco Connect. So then we'll have that data on an ongoing basis. Using this information, we can reveal enrollment patterns and the relative and comparative impact of different preschool experiences. Of course, all of this is with the goal of better preparing for our incoming kindergartners to serve them best.
Historically, our aim in early learning has been to ensure preschool offers equity and access, and that we embrace families as they begin their Jeffco journey with us. We currently enroll about 3,100 students. One-third of those students are students with individual education plans. About one-third of those students are designated at risk, and about one-third of those students don't fall into either of those categories. Our revenue streams are very similar to that, in that IDA is about one-third of our funding. The Colorado Preschool Program, which is allocated through the Department of Education and allows us to serve students who are at risk, and then tuition-paying students as well. Ongoing, we're working to align our Colorado Preschool Program opportunities where there is the most need, In the past, we've distributed those opportunities across the district equally, and we've worked hard over the last year and a half to really align those where there is the most need for families and in conjunction with our title school programs. That allows us to shift some more seats opening up for tuition-paying families. For our Colorado preschool program classrooms, we're required to have a lower ratio, and we're able to add more seats in our tuition-paying to ensure that more students have access. So that's been a benefit for us this year and should be moving forward as well. One hindrance we've had with equity and access has been space. And so as we move forward with sixth grade, going to the middle school, that will open up some opportunities for our team and for our community partners as well. We've worked very hard to ensure our alignment with best developmental practices for instruction and curriculum with our K-12 colleagues, and to become more a part moving forward. We'll be talking about that more in the stock take presentation. One thing we're really excited about is the hard work we've done with our finance team around ensuring that we have a budget that's sustainable. We've worked very hard with some significant cuts this year to ensure that we are not spending down our reserve, and we've been able to do that. And so we're really excited about that work and to help propel us toward our strategic planning moving forward. We're excited about a lot of things. This is a big one. We know that all of the work of early childhood does not just fall on the school district, and that our partnerships with the community are essential to providing our families and our students with needs so that they can be ready as they enter the school journey. And so we've been working with Early Childhood Coalition of Foundations that we have listed here, and Early Milestones, which is a nonprofit who's led some very exciting work in communities around us to build a birth to eight roadmap plan for our county, including the school district. And the work has emerged as the Jeffco Bright Futures Roadmap. The foundations are excited about funding this opportunity for Jefferson County, and Early Milestones is excited to help lead that work. They've been very successful in their work in Denver to build that roadmap and to get to some sustainable funding towards those ends across the county, including universal preschool funding. So we're very hopeful in that work, have learned a lot already from working with these partners in planning, and hope to begin that in August. Early Milestones has also worked with Summit County. You may have heard of a potential sales tax they're working on as well for early childhood initiatives, and we hope that that could potentially lead to some opportunities for us in Jefferson County as well. We've been working on Launch Together in Jefferson County with Jefferson County Mental Health, Health and Human Services, Public Health, DDRC, Colorado Statewide Parent Coalition, in ways to partner for social-emotional needs for our youngest learners in the county, and those partnerships have really started to become more collaborative. We found that we had a lot of connections with our families, but we really weren't maximizing those partnerships the way that we could, and those partners will be essential in our work moving forward on this roadmap. So as I mentioned, there are funding dollars that need to go along with this planning and this work, with which the Early Childhood Coalition of Foundations is excited to fund, and Early Milestones is excited to get into Jefferson County and do this work with us as a lead partner. And we'd love to have you all be a part of that process as well. Do you have any questions for Heather or I?
Questions, board members?
I have a number of them. If you go back to the, I think it was the second slide that shows the enrollment patterns, and it actually raised a number of questions for me. One is, do we know what the total population of the kids that are in that cohort? How many kids are not reflected in either of the Jefferson County school arrows there?
So if you look way up there, there's a little N. It says N3013.
Right, that's our kids.
Yeah, that's okay. Our kids, as well as the 465 are our kids as well. So if you put those two together. And we know that our enrollment in kindergarten is 6,000, a little over 6,000. So that gives you a sense of we probably have about half. Half of our kindergartners are attending HFCO preschool of some kind.
Right, but I don't think you can use our kindergarten enrollment because we still don't have all the kids in the county of kindergarten.
That's exactly right, yes.
How are we figuring out what the true size of the market, what the true size of the population of kids is?
So our best, I can look that up in the latest census. The census is a little old, but they have estimates for this year. So we could look at the latest census estimates and figure out how many five-year-olds, it'll be a range of 3 to 5 year olds in the census. They have them grouped. So we could look that up and find that out for you.
That was my question as well.
I think it's essential to know what the market is before we pat ourselves on the back or even evaluate how we're doing with it, because we're missing a huge portion of the picture.
We're missing lots of the picture here, lots and lots of the picture. And every time we do some sort of data collection, we try to find a little bit more of the picture. In the most recent Family School Partnership Survey, one of the open-ended questions was, why did you choose this school? And we're learning a lot from the analytics around that open-ended, those open-ended comments, that this is not random. Parents, what we're finding is there's a lot of comments in there about parents saying, I am enrolling in this school because I have siblings in the school, and I know that they can stay in the school right through to the next grade level. So we know this is not random, but there's a lot of missing parts. This is really just a toe dip into starting to look at these data. And it's as you can tell, very complex.
One of the things that seems to be apparent to me is if I add the numbers together, we're effectively losing, in the neighborhood schools now I'm talking, we're effectively losing 22% of the kids over a two-year time.
That's correct.
Those are the families that we actually had in our doors. Those are the families that we should be actually impressing and solidifying their relationship with us, and we're losing 1 in 5 of those families. We shouldn't be shocked that we aren't capturing them down the road, and that, you know, 11% of our kids are going to charters, and however many others are going to private. So I think this is an enormous problem that we have to address, because we're losing them before they ever show up. We don't even have a chance to get them into kindergarten and beyond. And so we need to address that, it seems to me.
Mr. Rupert, could I raise a couple of points in response to your questions? One is that the Bright Futures roadmap that they mentioned, the purpose of that is really to do that deeper analysis of what you're talking about. So we've secured philanthropic funding to do that analysis of what is the current state of the market, for lack of a better term, with kids not just that are preschool age, but that whole birth to 8 age range, and where are they, mm-hmm. where are they going, where are they being served. So that's one point. So I think the administration is in complete agreement that we need to get a better handle on where these students are, how many of them are, where they're being served, or where they're not being served, and also what is the quality of that. And then looking beyond that just sort of market analysis, looking ahead and thinking, what are our aspirations? What should a quality early childhood system look like for JEFCO over the long term? In terms of the number of students that we're able to serve in our preschools, we would like that to be the full population. The limiter on this is, of course, funding. So there is no sustainable funding stream to serve all of the children in JEFCO unless they have a disability or qualify under the CPP program as a student in poverty. Everyone else is tuition paying. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure what the number is here in JEFCO, but typically a preschool in Colorado costs about $16,000 a year per student to operate. So
it's like college tuition.
Yeah, and worth it based on the evidence that you have. So there's just a couple of other points I wanted to raise in response to the good questions that you asked.
No, it's exactly right. And I think we need to get really deliberate about this, because we're not going to solve our leakage of students out of the system unless we address the primary problem, which is at the very beginning. And so, one, we need to make sure that we know what our market is. Two, we have to make sure we're doing a really good job. And then we can start talking about how we roll it out, how we expand it. But there's no point in trying to expand it if we're not doing it well. And so I'm interested to know next, on a qualitative basis, how are we doing? What are we aiming for? How are we measuring it? And what are we doing? And I actually think that's the next presentation, which is the stock take, right? So I'm I'm getting a little ahead on that. There were a couple other points that I wanted to make, and one was that, you know, for each child that we earn and keep over their school life, it's many tens of thousands of dollars of the per pupil funding. And so I think it really does make a difference to us that if we can capture them at the early childhood education, if we can earn their loyalty and keep them in the schools, that's a gift that keeps on giving for the next 13 years. And so it is worth, it's worth pursuing that. It's worth getting that right. So there you go.
You mentioned space as a limiting factor, and that we may get some relief in that area as we move through the 6-8 movement. I think that's all good. I have hoped that would happen. Are there other limitations? And my question here, I guess, is what is it that is keeping us from moving this forward?
Yeah, I think, thank you for your thoughtfulness. It's so exciting to be able to have this conversation tonight. Really, it's going to come down to funding, because we're funded in a different way than our K-12 classrooms are. And so while space may open up, we may not be able to have the capital to convert those classrooms over to what's a licensable classroom for 3- and 4-year-olds. That's just a one-time cost that has some ongoing impact, and then being able to eke out from our current revenue streams, staffing that in a quality way. We don't want to expand without quality. We want to make very intentional steps towards access at all neighborhood schools, which our team believes is a part of whether you stay at your school or not, because if you have to go to a preschool and then move over to your neighborhood school, there's a transition we don't need to have. So there's cost to that. And so part of the work is really looking at how do we partner with the community, what is our community value, and how can we move forward together. And that's going to take a little bit of time, but I think we have some good momentum. And then what can we commit to as a school district moving forward? But the funding is going to be the biggest challenge for us at this point.
Not to steal your thunder, but in the stock take, you'll talk about expanding capacity being one of our strategic goals and how we plan on doing that.
Yes.
Now, I would think that we need a plan to move that forward. I had one other question. As I looked at the slides, I noticed that one-third of our enrolled students in the pre-program are IDEA students, but I don't think that percentage is true across the board in Jefferson County Public Schools. And so I'm wanting to ask the question, and I'm sure there's a logical answer. I just want to know what it is. Why would one-third of our enrollment in preschool be IDEA attributed?
The natural enrollment of students with disabilities is usually somewhere between 10 and 12% in most districts.
Yes.
The reason that you have a high enrollment level in preschools is that under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, the school district is obligated to serve those students. So once they're identified with a disability, we are obligated to serve them, and there's a funding stream that's attached to them. So there are always would be spots for students with disabilities in our preschools. So that's about a third of the enrollment. The other third comes from low-income students that also have a funding source attached to them. That final third is tuition-paying students. So again, if we had this funded the same way that we did first grade through 12th grade, we'd have a sustainable funding source and we'd be able to serve every kid in Jeffco. But that's the reason for the disproportionate numbers of students with disabilities and students that come out of poverty is that they have funding sources attached to them and no other students do.
So So if, as we move into the future and look at the stock take and those kinds of things, if we were fortunate enough to find additional resources and make additional investments, it is possible that we could balance those numbers. Is that, am I overstating my case?
No, I think that's, and you'll hear some more in the stock take around what our plans are around expansion. We do have a number of quality community partners that also provide early childhood education and private providers and religious faith-based providers. So there's a whole network or system of early childhood that exists in the community. And so we're one part of that, a significant, the largest part of that network of early childhood education and child care providers in Jefferson County. And so our goal going forward has to be to bring all of those entities in and think about how do we expand capacity and quality across all of Jeffco so that every child that grows up in this community has access to a quality program that they can afford.
Of the non-neighborhood school alternatives, are any of them equipped to serve the IDEA-identified kids, or is that really just our... We're the only game in town for those families.
We also partner with Head Start programs for the IDEA component.
So that would be the county and some municipal governments, Lakewood.
Right, but the private for-profits, the typically the parochial, they don't serve that population.
They are not obligated to. I'm sure that there are kids with disabilities that are in those programs that are being served. They're paying tuition, though, and that program is not obligated to serve that child.
Okay.
We are obligated.
Yeah, I understand.
I want to thank you for taking this on. And I think the migration of students is really a very, very complicated issue, one that I think we waded through a bit when we were addressing kindergarten as well, and the migration that occurs, that yes, many students would like to stay in their kindergarten and go through, but they will choose a kindergarten perhaps that they can afford and then go to their neighborhood school for first, second, third grade. So the resource issue there I think is critical, and that we have seen that and that continues. And then many reasons why people pick a preschool or a school. So I recognize it's challenging to do a presentation with all these unknown factors. So I appreciate you starting the process on that. You know, my kids went to a preschool in Denver because that's where I worked. They go to Jefferson County Schools because that's where I live. So and that was on a different campus. So it happens for various reasons. So, but I appreciate your comments as well, that for us as a board, as takeaways of what to do, I appreciate your comments of the resource issue. And what can we do? Because I do believe the critical points that you're making about keeping kids in an existing building for emotional, social connections, and educational gains is the right path. And when I'm in schools that have that connected preschool and ask them that question, many of them are staying, and they're able to track educational needs and accelerated challenges from much earlier on to the direct benefit of those kids.
Okay.
I've got a few things for clarification as well. But I've been looking forward to this presentation. I think all of us have for a very long time.
Yeah.
To the core, to the very core, I believe that early childhood education is key to leveling the playing field for all students. And that's why I think it's important to know, to maybe even get information on the private preschools. I mean, I don't care where any kid's going. I just think the more kids we have in preschools, the better, and that data serves our entire community. I would love to see if we could find any data on how many really and truly are in a preschool, regardless of what type of preschool. You know, I too had my children in a preschool near where I worked, which was not in Jeffco, at the beginning of their preschool career. So there are several reasons, you know, why mommies want their kids near them where they're working or whatever. But the data is solid, and it's well documented that where a child starts in the process of school, they will continue, and that's why so many schools want to get those kids, harness those kids at kindergarten. So we've been talking about expansion of our preschool programs for since fall of 2015, and so this is very exciting to me. I'm also, my question is, okay, I think I heard you say 3,100 students approximately are in preschool right now. in Jeffco preschools, and about 6,100 are in Jeffco kindergartens. Is that, did I hear that correctly?
Yes, and the 3,100 are 3- and 4-year-olds, whereas, so that would be like 2 grades.
Wow, okay. Yeah, that's
right.
That's a very important
clarification. They have 2 years in preschool if they're 3 and 4.
Okay.
And it's split pretty evenly.
Hmm. Okay. And then I also wanted to mention, in the Wheat Ridge area anyway, for the past 2 years of me going to Wheat Ridge Ed Alliance meetings, I mean, every single meeting they talk about how we need more preschools. We need more preschools in Wheat Ridge. We're trying to support people in opening up private ones. We need more preschools. So I've been also looking forward to the middle school transition because I know you guys have been talking that facilities have been an obstacle. So I'm looking forward to the stock take. I'm looking forward to future discussions on helping us level the playing field for all students in Jeffco through early childhood education. Thank you.
Thank you for all the information. It's a great first look, and I'm glad the work is moving. I'm glad it's something we'll return to as a part of our strategic plan very regularly, and trust to hear good updates. I want to make sure, just confirm for me, I'm hearing that we have some information, but we don't have the why, that that's going to take digging, and that there are, one of the purposes of the Bright Futures Partnership is to do some of that digging. I'm also hearing, I think that's critical because we need to identify the barriers in order to overcome them. I'm hearing that we have institutional barriers, including space, which we're working to flex new space that will come available in elementary schools. Funding is a barrier institutionally. I would assume funding is a barrier for families as well. I'm thinking about what are the other familial barriers and how are we getting a bead on what are the roadblocks families are facing in order to access preschool, and how will do we hope to learn that? Our eyes are kind of on what's visible, and I'm wondering what and who is not visible to us. And connecting to informal networks of childcare that exist in communities and families. Are there organizations that can help us do that so that we bring to visibility the students that are not yet in our system or even one of our partner systems?
Yeah, I think that's the last part is, all good thinking and wonderings. We have recently connected with Colorado Statewide Parent Coalition, who provides opportunities for friends, family, and neighbor providers who aren't licensed. Mm-hmm. So no providers that we've had access to before, and we're partnering with public health to do professional learning around readiness with those providers who are early childhood leaders in their neighborhoods. In the Wheat Ridge and Lakewood area, for this next year, we have 26 providers that we'll be working with around leadership in child development and readiness, preparedness to help them work toward transitioning families into the classroom. So there are partnerships that are building, and we recognize that those are choices families should and can make, and we want to support that and support those providers as well so that we are working together to ensure that students are ready and that we're ready for them when they come.
I think one of the other barriers that stands out to me as one we'll need to work with families to overcome is, you know, not just money is a resource that can be a barrier, but so is time. And we heard at this table that preschool decisions were made based on work. And when I think of families where everyone's working and we provide half-day preschool, we've immediately created a barrier. How are we working to address that?
Right. So we'll talk about that a little more in the stock take, okay. But I will say that when you look at our revenue streams, IDEA and Colorado Preschool Program, they are set up for half-day funding. Mm-hmm. So that's a pretty significant shift to be able to fund for a full day of school or an extended day or year-round, which we hear regularly. We don't have the data from the modelers yet, but we hear regularly, so the qualitative data for us is that we need that.
Yeah. Thank you. Look forward to what comes next in the stock take.
Okay, and I think it's probably time for us to move on to the next phase of this presentation. I do want to say This is a good beginning. I would suspect we'll have more conversations about this as time moves forward. But thank you all for the update. It's a good beginning, and I think, Ms. O'Dean, I think you're staying with us as we move on to the next phase, which is stock take. So let's make the necessary changes at the presentation table. And I'll introduce this next group. Aligned with the district strategic plan, the Board of Education will now receive a progress report on a district strategic priority. The early learning stock take will focus on goals and strategies aligned to its theory of action. Information on how the district monitors and adjusts high yield strategies will also be provided. Dr. Glass, would you like to add to that?
Just a reminder and an invitation to evaluate the statements and measures, direction that are brought forward in this stock take. This is a presentation on your strategic plan, and really in this first year, we want to spend a lot of time getting clarity around what we're trying to do and how we're trying to do it.
Thank you. And with that, I think, turn it over to you, Mr. McDermott.
Great. Thank you very much. Good evening. As we've mentioned a couple times, aligned with our strategic plan, the board's going to have an opportunity to engage with us on our progress on our strategic priorities. So we're looking forward to that conversation. And tonight, we're going to continue the conversation that Ms. O'Dean began with as the tactic leader of the Expand Early Childhood Quality and Quantity tactic. So our conversation is going to be structured around these four questions, and we're starting with the what are we trying to do, and I'll address that question from the perspective of the organization at large, and then Ms. O'Dean will add some detail and specifics on the three following questions specific to the early childhood tactic. So this visual is a reminder of our commitment of keeping the learning experience of students at the center of all of our efforts. And each strategy and tactic are designed to have a positive impact on student learning. And the early childhood tactic is in the readiness for learning circle and really focuses on preparing our youngest students for academic and developmental success throughout their school and life experiences. So and this visual here is really just to remind us that each tactic is part of a larger and interdependent system. And really orienting us to where the tactics are situated within this structure. And you can see that the tactics are down at the bottom of the image, and this specific one is underneath the readiness for learning strategy. So through our continuous improvements efforts and a sustained commitment to the strategic priorities in the plan, we believe that over time, our student experiences and outcomes across the entire system will improve. The indicators reflected here, they represent important and commonly used metrics of success in education systems, such as the SAT, graduation rates, CMAS, and early literacy. And these indicators were developed by benchmarking against our highest performing neighbors. These indicators are less common, and they're specific to JEFCO and reflect our values, where we have the purple and green equity growth indicators really reflect gap closing metrics. For our underserved communities. And then we have the CCRI, the College Career Readiness Index, which reflect our commitment to increasing opportunities and successful participation in career and college level courses. And the non-academic indicators really reflect our commitment to positive experiences for our staff, families, and students. And with that, I'll turn it over to Ms. O'Dean.
Thank you. So, as Tom mentioned, we'll go through the questions, each question. What are we trying to do, and how are we trying to do it? When we look at expanding early learning for our county, our theory of action is that if we increase the quality and quantity of academically and developmentally focused opportunities for pre-K students within our schools and with community partners, then those students will enter kindergarten academically and developmentally ready and will be able to sustain that academic proficiency. So we've created two SMART goals in alignment with that, one for quality and one for quantity. The quantity component is more linear because we can look at how many seats we have available that we're able to offer in the programs that we have. And I'll go into more depth on that as we go through the presentation. Our quality one is a little more difficult, and what we're looking at utilizing is our Jeffco Kindergarten Early Assessment for Readiness. We've worked very hard with our assessment team and with our teachers to come up with a measure that really helps us understand the whole child and how different domains within the assessment help us see the cognitive abilities, the math, emotional and social development, health and physical development, and language development and literacy. We believe that all of these measures are essential, and as we look at our milestones and the work that we're doing toward that, we'll be able to see how that comes together. We did our initial assessment this fall, so we have some baseline data that we can look at. It is our first year of that data, but it's still essential for us to dig into that and figure out how we can really increase the progressions for our kids where they're most heavily distributed to the next progression on the continuum. Since it is a developmental continuum, it's different than looking at student achievement data, and we'll get into that on an upcoming slide. First, I'd like to talk a little bit about how we're going to get to that. How are we right now addressing some strategies to get toward the quality component of early education? These milestones show how we're working toward preschool through third grade best developmental practices. There is a lot of research, some significant research out of the University of Washington, that gives us a framework to be able to align our strategies towards gains that have been sustainable through even fifth and eighth grade in other systems that have utilized these practices. Our team has worked closely with our teachers to really find local evidence and see what's working in our classrooms with our kids. And that's work that's beginning to expand through all preschool through third grade classrooms. We are building a school leadership training series on child development and these P3 practices that we plan to implement and have some funders who are interested in helping support that work for us in the next school year so that we could really tap into our school leadership, instructional leaders and principals to help continue to bring that work. We're also looking at teacher pilots. You may know that staffing models are different in other school districts in preschool than what we have here in Jeffco. So we're going to be piloting two preschools with Colorado Department of Education licensed teachers next year. We do, again, have national data around the quality of the education that's provided, but we want to gain some local evidence as well and make sure that we're taking those just right next steps as we look at expanding quality. And then again, the Jeffco Bright Futures Roadmap will help us define how we move forward. So some of the indicators that we'll be looking at are our preschool teaching strategies gold data, which are the same domains as our kindergarten early assessment. We have a beginning of year, middle of year, and end of year assessment. So those will help us track our work toward quality to see specific student outcomes as we go through the school year. The early assessment that we have for kindergarten will grow into a kindergarten through third grade continuum. So as that happens, we'll be able to track the cohort students that we're building through those to see where our sustainable outcomes lie. We'll continue to collect data around observations of best developmental classrooms with teachers and school leaders in classrooms, and we'll be able to continue to look at our work as compared to the system framework from the National Institute out of the University of Washington. For our access measure, current work around expanding access is because of our shifts in alignment with the Colorado Preschool Program seats and being able to expand ratio and to be able to fill all of our seats, we will have approximately 7% expansion for next school year. We are also in partnership collaboratively with other school districts, early learning teams, working with CASE and Colorado Department of Human Services to gain an alternative pathway for licensure. We're currently regulated in the preschool by the Department of Human Services, over 200 regulations for those classrooms, as well as CDE through our Colorado Preschool Program Connections. And so a lot of times that can take away from the work that we'd like to do towards quality. And so as an early learning public school leader, we're working very hard to collaborate to ensure that there's an alternative pathway for preschools that are in public school settings. In many states, the Department of Human Services does not regulate the preschool program if it is in an accredited school district. And so we're looking at what opportunities there might be for us to do that in Colorado. And we've worked with our, as I mentioned earlier, our finance team, and really looked at streamlining programs. So historically, preschools have opened and programs have opened by demand of the neighborhood and what those needs were. It might have been a 2-day, half-day program. It might have been a 3-day, 4-day, 5-day program. And so we really looked at what were our most efficient models financially and where were we really getting our most bang for our buck instructionally. And we're able to streamline programs for next school year that we believe will benefit both quality and access. The leading indicators for expanded access really are going to be pretty straightforward with our October count and our December counts, and then our monthly enrollment monitoring. And we'll continue to review what options are available for families by articulation area. When we look for evidence of this in our classrooms right now, there are a lot of stories that we can tell that are very exciting stories. We've worked very hard on the preschool through third grade best instructional practices, where students are leading their learning, where students are involved in inquiry, where they have hands-on opportunities, and it's been exciting to see their engagement and their growth. We have a particular parent who is a principal in our district who has had an amazing opportunity with his family and his daughter, who came into the preschool program on a referral from ChildFind with some significant speech language needs. And he will tell the story of how amazing preschool has been and the opportunities that she has had because that was identified early. They were afraid for her being ready for school, and now that she's entering kindergarten, she's off her individual education plan and is able to enter kindergarten with confidence and beginning as a beginning reader, and who this particular parent believes will enter as a leader, where she may not have had that opportunity if she hadn't had that experience. And so for us, that really gets to the heart of why this is so important for every family who has that need to have this experience, regardless of whether they're right down the street from a Jeffco preschool or not. This is our hope and our dream and why we have this as part of our strategic plan. So at any given moment, how will we know if we're on track? When we look at each SMART goal, the first we'll show the one towards quality, where we're looking at really increasing that readiness level for students coming in. We know we have a small number of students who are with our preschool programs, but we want to impact all of our students, so that goes back to the partnerships that we have in the community. It's pretty complex because it is a developmental continuum, and while there are 6 domains, there are 10 constructs, and there are progressions for each of those. So this is an example of the cognitive domain and where our current kindergartners scored on their screener data. And what we're really looking to do is, since we now have this data we haven't had in the past, is to work with our teachers very closely to be thoughtful about how can they be responsive to this data. What does this mean for instruction in the classroom? It's a formative assessment, so teachers can make these decisions as they're making their observations, but they can also utilize this data in long-term planning. So it's very exciting data to have, and we're working very hard with our assessment team and with our teachers on that work. When we look at our SMART goal towards access, we can look back a few years at our enrollment data and our expansion and the trajectory that we're currently on and what we hope to get to. This takes into account our planned expansion for next year and hopeful increasing expansion depending on how the funding is, we're able to play out with the funding. But right now, this is a trajectory that we believe we'll be able to meet. And I'll just add that the expansion process will be looked at by articulation area with equity in mind and ensuring that we are meeting the families' needs. So we believe that in this theory of action, even though there are SMART goals that are separate for quality and for access, that we can't make those decisions without both in mind. So okay, so when we look at where we are towards this work of the strategic plan, we're utilizing the implementation heat map and aligned rubric to that. So when we look at where we are as a team and as a district toward the strategic plan for planning, we're a little bit mixed. And part of that is because of the concerns around resources. And part of that is almost all the way green because we have a lot of momentum moving toward what we believe is the right work for our kids and for our community. When we look at the capacity, we struggle a little bit more and are in the yellow because while we have balanced our budget and we have some plans to expand with foundations, at this point in time, we don't necessarily have the funding to do what we would be hopeful of doing. Our evidence of progress is in the lighter green because it is mixed in that we have a new data point that we're utilizing and we still have a lot to learn about it, but we believe it is the right data that will help guide us toward the quality components in alignment with the P3 National Institute rubric for a system work toward that. But as far as the student outcomes, that will grow as we grow as a system utilizing that data. And then our likelihood of success is dependent upon our capacity. So while we all have an agreement of how we would like to move forward and what's important to us, we need to align the resources to be able to do that and do that well. So some successes we've had toward the plan so far have been that we are able to increase our number of seats for next school year. We have several pilots, including our CDE licensed pilots and some pilots with our special education partners as well to look more deeply at quality locally. We have our efforts with our early childhood teams across school districts in Colorado working toward an alternative pathway to reduce some of the licensing regulations. We have some momentum in schools around our preschool through third grade best developmental instructional practices. And we have the Early Childhood Coalition foundations on board to move forward with a Bright Futures roadmap that hopefully will help us build deeper partnerships with the community to move forward together. If we're not on track, what are we going to do about it? So we have some challenges. We talked a little bit about capital costs of converting classrooms. Space had been a hindrance. We're opening up some space, which is very exciting and creates some urgency for us. But we have to be able to ensure that we have the cost to convert those classrooms. We have some disparity between professional expectations of our teachers in preschool as compared to kindergarten through 12th grade. That's a challenge that hopefully our pilots will help us better understand and move forward. And then the challenges of the rules and regulations. So the resources that would be required would be some sustainable operational funding source, additional community awareness, and the alternative pathways from the Department of Human Services. When we look at our alignment with the board ends, We really believe that we are the foundation for all that is to come, and take that very seriously. When we really look at quality, we're looking at best instructional practices. And although we will be working with community partners, I believe our team would say that we would expect ours to be the highest quality. But towards board ends, best practices, embracing families as they come in, setting students on a positive path, and really maximizing the early interventions are essential to the third ends. What questions do you have?
Colleagues, just a quick reminder, time is somewhat of an issue. Let's see if
we can. Each have 10 seconds ready.
Well, we're going to use more than that, Mr. Ruffer, but let's keep in mind that we're on a time clock.
I was very surprised when I started doing school visits and the school visits where there were preschools, that the existence of this preschool, the management of this preschool is very much independent of what goes on in the rest of the building. And I guess, Dr. Glass, I'm interested in, do you envision that being the same structure going forward? Do you expect to change that so that the preschool is more integrated with the rest of the building and the rest of the teaching staff?
Yeah, Dawn and her team have been evaluating that structure and how it might be restructured to be more efficient, so I'll let her answer that.
Okay.
It's a really great question. And I think part of how that developed was because of this model of where there was a need and there happened to be space, the school came in. And the other part of that is the licensing component, because it's so unique compared to the rest of the grades. That being said, really truly believe if we're going to get to the quality outcomes, the preschool staff has to be a part of the school staff. Professional learning, instructional supports, and in alignment with those best developmental practices. And so a lot of our K-12 colleagues haven't necessarily had the training or the expertise, guidance around best practices developmentally for three-year-olds and up. And so that's part of our plan for the school leadership professional learning series that we'll offer so that we can start to build that capacity in our schools. But really do believe that that's what's best for our staff, that's what's best for our kids and our families, to really feel like preschool is a grade when they walk in the door, that they know that they're a part of that community and that it isn't a separate community.
I've been asking about the preschools that are within schools on my visits quite a lot. One of the comments that was made to me was, because they're separate, they actually don't even use often the same vocabulary with the kids. And so in one school, they discovered that the kindergarten teachers were trying to get the kids to do things using one set of instructions and terms, and they were frustrated. Why aren't these children prepared? They've came through our preschool. Well, over time, they discovered they were just calling an activity different things.
Right.
It wasn't that the children weren't prepared. They were simply calling them different things. If we can somehow unify what goes on in the building, I think we can overcome that sort of disconnect.
Absolutely.
I will also say, I think self-examination is really important to our process of getting better at what we do. And I have the impression, and this is from the principals, I have the impression that there's a substantial amount of variability across our various preschools. Some of them have extraordinary positive reputations. They're continuously full. And others, frankly, not so much. And so I think we have some distance to get to consistently high quality education so that we can retain these families and these children and do what's best for them educationally.
Absolutely, and I would say our team is in agreement with that. And I think there's a lot of different reasons for that, one being what we talked about earlier around the expectations and the pay. We've struggled to staff every site full all year long because of the disconnect and the expectations with the pay, and that's something that has to change, and that's something that we have to address and really look at. We do a lot of work around our high-performing sites that have continual family feedback that's high, that have principal feedback that's high, that we hear from kinder teachers regularly, more consistently than we don't, but we know that we, in order to get to that consistency, we have to really look at how are we aligning our practices there.
Is there a common curriculum within the existing preschools?
So there is a JEFCO curriculum for preschool as well, and the Department of Education has standards that are required. We have a main resource that we utilize across the system. We're really looking on our alignment within each school because of the common language component that you mentioned, as well as eliminating that transition. The last thing we want to do is create a transition when we have a preschool in a building to that kindergarten. That's a really big reason why we want to have a preschool, is so we eliminate that transition. And so this instructional practices have to be systemic in the work. We have some principals who are very involved with the preschool, and the preschool team is a part of the professional learning, and we have some schools where that is not the case.
Is there a name? Is it still Tools of the Mind, or what is
Tools
it?
Of the Mind is has in the past been the curriculum that we've utilized. Mm-hmm. It is utilized as a resource to ensure that we're in alignment with the standards and the rigor of the standards that are expected, as well as really focusing on being responsive to student need.
Okay. And then I was wondering, did I hear you correctly as far as licensure you are wanting for our preschool teachers to have Colorado preschool licenses, or were you just saying some other districts do that?
All of our teachers are accredited early childhood teachers through the Department of Human Services.
Right, is different than the licensure.
The Colorado Department of Education licensure.
So what is your vision?
Most of the research shows that when you do have a Department of Education licensed teacher, the quality of the system goes up.
That's what I thought I inferred from what you were saying, and I wanted to make sure.
We do have several teachers who are choosing to teach preschool who have that license, and we do have many teachers who are exceptional teachers without that license.
Right.
But when you look at a system-wide raising the quality, that's one indicator that's shown great gains.
Okay, and then I wanted to clarify, you're looking at 7% growth in seats next year. Is that within existing preschool programs, or will we have more programs at new schools opening?
It's within existing. We are adding a classroom at Shelton as part of the Pleasant View closing rollout continuation, now that they will have space. And we have shifted a few classrooms from one school to another school based on need, but there won't be any additional new classrooms created. That will be through the number of seats that are provided.
Okay, then my last question is your 10% figure for 19-20 through 22, is that 10% more schools will be opening new programs, or 10% seats total?
It would be seats total, but it will have to come from additional school sites.
Okay. Thank you.
I want to jump into the theory of action and SMART goals a little bit and have a conversation there. Mm-hmm. So I want to begin with the theory of action and just notice that there's a word that I have heard used interchangeably, and I want to be careful not to. And you're welcome to correct me on that. If JEFCO Public Schools Earning Learning Team increases the quality of and quantity of academic development, then I have heard the word quantity and access kind of used interchangeably, and I'm afraid we're going to bump up against something if that's the case. I'm not sure we're going to get everything we're looking for if we have a "if you build it, they will come" mentality, because I think that there are barriers that families face that make that difficult. So I'm looking for us to be more specific about having a theory of action that addresses access and overcoming barriers for families. I do think you're right. If we've got demand we can't meet because we don't have the seats, we're in trouble. Quantity is essential. We do need to grow our quantity,
right,
our capacity. But I do also believe that for the sake of both equity and practicality, we have families that are going to be facing tuition barriers, time barriers, pressures of working families. I think we need to be more deliberate in our theory of action. I think. I'm putting on the table and I'm asking. Because my goal is not just that we see an extra 100 families come in and call that a win, or even 500, or even 1,000, if there's another 1,000 waiting that can't,
right,
even if they want to. So I would like to consider approaching quality, quantity, and access, and tease out access just a little bit more. Because I do think that we want to ensure. I just looked at the new kind of information about enrollment. We're not realizing half,
right,
of the students that we see in kindergarten in our, right, preschools. And I think quality, quantity, and access matters.
Well,
I don't want to close that. I did have one second thing on the SMART goals. I have really appreciated what we saw in the strategic plan and those system indicators, that there was a commitment to aspirational goal setting that was still grounded in research and proof points. This is attainable, but we intend to be not just high quality, but high quality and really highest quality. Can you help me understand how we'll know we're doing that if we have a JEFCO-specific tool for assessment?
Are you talking about that proof of, what was the phrase? Proof of existence,
proof,
as setting our, I was
our
asking about that too.
Goals.
That's my question too.
Yes, yeah, so we call it the JEFCO Kindergarten Early Assessment. That's the screener. It's developed out of North Carolina with a 10-state consortium to address the readiness requirements in school districts. So while in the state of Colorado, the Department of Education chose a vendor to provide that, the state of North Carolina got together with other states and their Race to the Top funds and experts in the field and built an assessment with educators.
So am I hearing yes, we will be able to do aspirational comparable goal setting,
yes,
that isn't kind of invisible outside, like, okay, yay,
yes,
that's what I wanted,
yes,
thank you. I appreciate that reassurance.
Yeah.
I think our kids deserve us to chase excellence that provides them everything they need on the world stage. The one last thing I want to mention, because I know it's something that Dr. Glass, you and your team have surfaced last summer as something that matters. I see it there in the theory of action. We want to be academically and developmentally focused. And part of that is, and one of our driving board ends statements is about a safe and welcoming climate and culture. Talk to me about how we are making sure that our students in our earliest years of education have a really responsive, restorative experience in discipline. And tell me how the progress has gone for the district on that, knowing that some of the information indicated that boys had a tougher experience with that sometimes and that our students of color did as well at times.
Sure. So that's equally as important to us in preschool as well as kindergarten through third grade. And I think one of the biggest components of addressing that was really being thoughtful about what's happening to engage kids in the classroom and really being thoughtful about our best practices work that includes the environment of the classroom. Because if we're disengaging kids because we aren't utilizing best practices to engage kids and honoring their thinking and their self-direction with our youngest learners, then we know we're going to have some discipline concerns moving forward. So one of the big ways that we've supported our teachers and directors in being thoughtful about that is really looking at what type of management is happening in the classroom, why there are concerns, and what are the adults in the room really being thoughtful about to ensure the students are engaged in the learning and a part of the learning. The last thing we want to do is hinder that with 3- and 4-year-olds, and especially in our primary grades at the elementary. But we also have had some amazing support from our social workers that are focused on early learning in thoughtful planning and intention around restorative practices, working with our teachers, working with our families around how we're supporting students together who have some struggles and challenges in unique ways, so that we're entering as partners to figure out, keep kids in class, and really be supportive about how we're moving forward together.
Yeah, I think it maybe further gives evidence of why Mr. Rupert's point that integrate, and Ms. LaSalle's point that integration with the rest of the school community can be valuable, that they're a part of all of those conversations and best practices trainings to address that. But I'm also hearing a significant demand for resources in order to be able to do all of that. So thank you. I'm holding on to that.
Thank you. I know we need to get Ron going wrong. I just wanted to thank you for teasing out the access part in great detail, Amanda. And I know we're off schedule, but I think that's critically important. So thank you. Yes. And your story to me about the principal whose daughter was in preschool, able to then take advantage of that early intervention, and how wonderful it would be, and I'm assuming they didn't have access barriers, I'm just gonna make that assumption, that we then have children that may not have that opportunity until kindergarten, and then how many of them do not have that opportunity until first grade, and all of those years of maybe continuing on that IEP or never becoming a leader, that access point is really critical, as well as the need for this early intervention for as many students as we can get in there. And I recognize all these other pieces are really important, but that story to me is why this work is critically important.
Thank you.
Now I would simply like to throw this out for consideration. I think, you know, goals that are realistic, goals that are potentially exciting and achievable are good things. But I think the goals that we have on this one may be limited by the resources that we are investing in this concept. And therefore, I want to say that at some point, I would like to know what it would take to greatly speed up this process and greatly expand this program. Our board has talked about early childhood education as being a priority for us. And so at some point, I think we have to explore what would it cost and how could we speed up this process.
And that's what your early childhood roadmap will do, so that philanthropically funded work that we'll be engaging in will answer that question.
So there may be some, yes, thank you, Dr. Glass. I'm not trying to pressure anyone. I'm just saying I want
pressure.
You to know that it's a priority, or we have expressed it as a priority, so what does it take? Mm-hmm. All right, given that, did you want to make another comment, Ms. Odeen?
Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Odeen. Mr. McDermott, thanks for being with us. I know that we're running slightly behind, and I'm still going to recommend that we take a short 10-minute break as a board, and we'll begin our regular meeting in 10 minutes. For those who are watching online, we'll pick this up at 6:25.